This is the Apple This Extra.
Welcome, everyone, to the Apple This Extra. This is our end-of-year wrap-up show. I think this is the first one we've actually done like this, so this is going to be fun. I'm Alex Hall, and with me I have Tyler Steven. Tyler, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. How are you? Staying warm. I know it's freezing cold.
Oh, God, it's freezing in Maine. Yeah, we've been to negative temperatures, and yeah.
All this week is... It's no routine. If I wake up and it's above zero, it's a good day. So
yeah.
And we've also got Scott Davert. Scott, what's up with you?
Hey, Alex. Just got back from Michigan, which was even colder. It was -7 when I got up one morning. So, Charlotte, you know, at 30-something degrees, not so bad anymore.
Wow. 30-something degrees would be nice right about now. And finally, we have Dave Nason. Dave, are you warmer over where you are in the UK?
Oh, not the UK, Ireland. Never make that mistake, Alex.
Oh, no. Sorry.
I'm toasty warm at about 5 degrees Celsius, I'd say.
That'd be nice.
You know. So, yeah, all good. All good.
Lucky you. Well, glad everyone's doing well. Today is December 31st. It is the final day of 2017, of course. And we wanted to cover all the Apple things that have happened that have affected us or our community in the biggest ways. So we won't go over absolutely everything, but we'll cover some of the highlights and some of the things that made the biggest impacts. And I wanted to start, of course, with our Golden Apple recipients, who deserve a lot of praise, every single one of them, even the nominees who didn't get the final cut. Everyone did a great job, and we're very thankful for all of their work. But to the guys on the panel, what do you think were your top picks? Maybe they got an Apple, maybe they didn't, but what were the apps that affected you the most or that you're most thankful for coming out of 2017? And I guess Dave, we'll start with you.
Does that mean I get the easy one, seeing AI?
You took it.
Yeah, someone had to, didn't they? I mean, it combines just everything. You know, Thomas mentioned it in his podcast about it. Like, it kind of has combined several other apps that people would have been using all into the one, and it works so well. I was late to the party in the sense that here in Ireland we only got it about a month ago or something like that, when it extended out to the 35 countries. So we were looking jealously across the Atlantic at you with it, and when it came, yeah, I think it's brilliant. Like, things like the short text and the product, I think in particular channels, they just are so useful compared to, I love TapTapC, and those guys at TapTapC deserve a lot of credit for what they've done. But so much faster just to use Seeing AI now to, you know, discover products, or, you know, even looking through, even compared to using full OCR for, you know, going through my mail or something, you can just use short text for a lot of it in Seeing AI. So yeah, it's a brilliant app, like an absolutely brilliant app.
Well, I think the rest of us are going to have a harder time now, but Tyler, what are you thinking?
Well, ditto to what Dave said. Seeing AI is really, without a doubt, the best app I've used really in a long time. Obviously, assistive apps have been coming out for many years now. A lot of them show up. Few are as good as Seeing AI. I've had a lot of uses of Seeing AI, and also, it has helped to condense some of the utilities into one app, so I don't have like a huge arsenal of multiple apps. I can just use one app for short text, OCR for documents, barcodes, etc. So I really like Seeing AI.
Who doesn't? Scott, anything different to add?
Well, I mean, I of course like Seeing AI, but I think, you know, I'll go with another one just to not be in the majority, I guess. For me in 2017, an app I used a lot was actually Expedia, which isn't an assistive app, but, you know, when I'm trying to book travel and I'm trying to do all these great things, I finally now have an app that will actually do what it is that I want to do, and I don't have all these problems with like the calendar and selecting different things. So for me, yeah, Seeing AI is great, but I think we need to recognize some of the other apps and app developers here too. So I'll throw mine in there.
Wow. Well, that's really good to know. I wasn't sure Expedia was... I don't know, I saw some mention of it, but I wasn't quite sure what it did or how useful it was, so that's really nice to know. I think mine, apart from, of course, the requisite seeing AI, mine actually might just be Twitterific for macOS. That came out, I think, in August or September. I've been beta testing it for a while before that, so I don't remember what the final release date was. No, maybe the beta was August. Anyway, it came out sometime in the second half of 2017, and up until that point, Night Owl was really the only third-party accessible Twitter client for the Mac. The official Twitter client gained decent accessibility earlier in the year, possibly in 2016, but it wasn't really all that useful, at least for the way I use Twitter. It works, but you can't do a lot of the extra things that third-party clients let you do. So having Twitterific was just a huge boost to my Mac productivity, and I know to that of a lot of other people as well. It's a little bit pricey at $20, but honestly, I think it's worth it, partly for just the utility that it brings, but also because the company is really worth supporting. And they kickstarted this whole thing. It started as, I think it was a Kickstarter, or Indiegogo, one of those two. But they crowdfunded it. And in crowdfunding, what you do is lay out what you're going to make and what features it'll have, what it'll do. And one of their core features actually was accessibility. Like, right on the main page, you know, access direct messages, do Twitter lists, accessibility. It was right up there. It was with everything else. And that was great to see. Just to see a mainstream company that has really no stake in accessibility specifically. You know, they're not an audio game maker. They're not anything like that. But to see a company like that come out and say, we're going to make this, and our core principle says we're going to make it accessible as well as making it visually pleasing and workable and everything else. So that was awesome to see. I have no problem supporting them with a $20 purchase. And to be able to do the new Twitter things, you know, the new character limit, open URLs, see the actual URL, do quoted tweets, all the stuff that Night Owl can't do is definitely worth it to me. So that's my pick for 2017's app of the year, I think.
That's a great choice, and like, it's funny that you kind of say that $20 is an expensive app. There was a time where that wouldn't have been thought the case at all, and we've got so used to just getting apps for close to nothing that I think it is really important that, you know, when there's a really good app like that out there, that we support it. So yeah, I think it's great that great to have,
and especially when it doesn't come from a Seeing AI is made by Microsoft, and Microsoft's got money. You know, they're good. They're fine. But even so, you know, I wouldn't mind paying some money for Seeing AI. If that were a purchased app, it'd still be worth it to me. But the indie developers, the small companies, I always like to support them when I can. There are other apps worth mentioning. You know, Crafting Kingdom is one of our Golden Apple. Did they win it? I don't remember.
They did. I think the developer. They were nominated in the developer category, though.
Because, developer, that was the one, yes.
I mean, if you look at the Applebee's site, there's like 700-800 comments on that thread that they started, which was looking for help.
They're huge, like Dave said, and they're also big into accessibility. So even though it's a game that I wouldn't necessarily enjoy all that often, or, you know, it's not my thing quite as much, I did find myself enjoying it enough that I was quite happy to make their in-app purchase and, you know, give them that money. It didn't get me anything monetarily, but just supporting them because they're doing so much for our community, I think, is well worth the $5. So,
yeah, I never actually played it. One thing I did try was Ryan, I can't remember his surname, Black Box, which did win, I believe, the game category. I tried it, and like, it's such a different game that like I kind of need to go back and try it again, kind of thing. But,
it's an awesome app.
It's crazy that, you know, an app like that, so many developers would have just not even considered accessibility, and he really looks like really embraced that idea. And thought about how we could bring us in.
Anybody else, any final thoughts on apps of the year?
My thought is an overall one, and that is that look at this conversation that we're having. I mean, it's great that specific companies that are dedicated to developing assistive apps are doing it, but look at Microsoft and Expedia and all these other apps that we're talking about that are in the mainstream that are now accessible. I think that's really a telling sign of progress.
That's true.
big time. When you look at things like, you know, there was a time where Spotify couldn't work, or I even think if you go to talk about again about indie apps, like indie developers, I remember, you know, Pedometer Plus Plus, David Smith, he's like a reasonable size developer, you know what I mean, he's quite popular in the mainstream, but like I emailed him to say, hey, Pedometer Plus Plus is broken with VoiceOver. He added me to the beta program, and within about a month or two, he had it fixed, you know. That kind of thing is just, there is definitely more awareness out there, I think, and improvements happening in the mainstream.
Yeah, I love to see that. The Brian, the developer of the Carrot series of apps, did the same thing. I tried his workout app a few years back. I couldn't use it. I emailed him, and same exact thing. I was on the beta team, and he was fixing things. It was crazy. And now all the Carrot apps are super usable, and they're great.
Yeah. Which brings, does anyone use Weather Gods? Because that got a lot of support.
I don't actually. Carrot has me hooked. I used Carrot Weather for my weather.
I use a local app, and I use the main, just the built-in one. I'm not, I don't get deep into weather too much, but I know some people are huge into the weather apps, and Weather Gods went down very well.
Oh, it did. Yeah, I tried it briefly. I know they're a really visual app, but they also did a great job of making it accessible. And they're not an accessibility company either. So, like Dave said, awesome to see.
Yeah, I don't use the Carrot Weather either, but it does sound from the comments on Apple this, you know, on the site that it's gotten a lot of discussion and attention. Like, I just use the native app, but it's good to see like an app of that nature getting all that accessibility attention.
Yeah, it definitely is. And hopefully there'll be more of that coming up this year and beyond. Well, getting off of third-party apps, let's move into Apple's first-party software. They released, of course, a lot of updates. We had tvOS, watchOS, macOS, and iOS all updated in the fall and updated subsequently up to, a couple weeks ago, I think the most recent iOS update dropped. And in among all the new features and everything in those updates, of course, are accessibility changes and fixes and new features. So what have you guys found to be the most useful or most favorited accessibility-specific feature in any platform, whatever one you want to pick, or if you want to pick more than one, go for it. And let's start with Tyler this time.
Well, in a way, I feel like the image descriptions are useful in that, although they're not very descriptive for details, they do give a kind of a starting picture. Like, sometimes I'll be on, you know, on Safari or Twitter or something, and just to get an idea of what a picture is, to see if I'm interested enough to go to share and recognize with Seeing AI, I think that's a pretty useful feature. Other than that, my use case hasn't really been too much affected iOS version to iOS version. I still use it the same way. There are obviously a number of welcome improvements in iOS 11. I've gotten snappier voiceover performance, which is great, which is always great. I think that's basically my thoughts.
All right. Scott, I think I know which one you're going to say, but go ahead.
Well, those new low vision feature. Oh wait, no, that wasn't what I was going to say, was it? Although they did get some really good upgrades with iOS 11, I'd have to say overall the captioning of Braille, of course, would be a big thing for me. Even though it's not on every video, of course, but the fact that it's available cross platform, so whether you're on tvOS or iOS, I don't know if the Mac has it or not, but that ability to watch, quote-unquote, watch movies again for me, as someone who missed a lot of dialogue in the past couple of years, is pretty awesome. I think that that's a really huge step forward.
Oh, I thought you were going to go for the improved Braille input on iOS.
Well, I didn't want to make it too, you know, predictable. I mean, come on. I mean, that's, the Braille input is still a little quirky in some places, but I do have to say that the ability to customize Braille display commands on iOS has really improved things for me a lot, particularly having access to command and Option and some of those keyboard commands, you know, the ability to emulate them on the Braille display is really, really bumped up my productivity, especially in the email app.
Yeah, I'll bet you can just hit a key and make a new email or, you know, go to your inbox or all the keyboard commands. You can finally map those. So Safari and Mail must be way faster for you now.
Yeah, it's I haven't really used them a whole lot on Safari, but email particularly, and then if I need to do any kind of simple formatting in the Notes app, for example, just being able to hit, you know, the it's .17 with spacebar for command and then B to turn bold on instead of having to go into edit and do all those things that just take forever. You know, it's a huge productivity gainer.
And Dave, what about you?
It's a tough one. Actually, it's funny Scott would mention the media descriptions, because even on a speech point of view, I noticed that I was watching a movie on Netflix last week and there was a few scenes that had subtitles, and next thing VoiceOver just started reading the subtitles to me, and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So I hadn't actually come across it up to that point. Another thing I really liked was when I got a new phone, especially, and I got, you know, I was moving all my apps around and being able to just pick up multiple apps in one go and put them into a folder or what have you. I really like that kind of feature, the change they made to the home screen and to how we overhaul our home screen or move apps around. I think that was really cool. And just generally, I think they added some good verbosity settings and things like that to VoiceOver. So I think, yeah, it's kind of maybe small enough features in one way, but, you know, it's just continued kind of improvement of how VoiceOver works, you know, year on year, which is what I think I'll say.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I don't have a specific favorite feature, but just a lot of the incremental improvements. You know, you can now make VoiceOver change pitch, play a sound, or speak when it encounters links. You can finally toggle column headers and row numbers. And there's a lot of small things that used to be only on the Mac that are now on iOS that are great to see. As more and more people use iPads and iPhones as their primary devices, especially, you know, the more customization we have, the better. Image descriptions are also a big one that I really like. As Tyler said, though, they're not perfect. They don't tell you exactly what's going on, but it's usually enough to get an idea.
I have trouble using them, though. I find it doesn't often, it'll just say center of page, or you know what I mean, or row, or whatever. You know what I mean? It won't actually do the image description. So,
it does happen sometimes. I haven't quite figured it out. But
yeah.
Especially on the, it seems like on the Mac, you have to do it two or three times before it fully, I don't know if it just takes a while to run whatever AI it runs, but it seems like you've got to repeat it a couple of times before it'll work perfectly. Not perfectly, but better than the first time you tried it. Yeah, definitely not perfect at all.
Yeah, but definitely, but you're right, though. It's a good step. Like, it's all towards, you can imagine in a few, 10 years' time, what those kind of systems will be able to do.
And the other, speaking of which, I don't know if anyone else has run across this, but iOS 11 had the ability to start guessing at control names if a button doesn't have a label or something. I don't know if it does OCR or what it does, but it tries to fill in the name. And I cannot remember the app I was in, but there was one app that had nothing was labeled and everything was just horribly, horribly laid out. But I was able to start getting around because iOS was automatically labeling some of the controls that didn't already have it. That was really cool. It's something that you'll almost never need, but when you need it, it is wonderful to have, and it does a pretty decent job as far as I could tell in my single use case test.
Yeah, actually, it's a really good point. I have come across that a few times where there's buttons that maybe in a graphical sense, they have obviously got the name of the button written on it, but from a VoiceOver point of view, they're blank. So yeah, definitely.
Yep. Let's next move to Apple's hardware releases. They released a lot of stuff, a whole lot of stuff. But instead of covering absolutely everything they did, I just want to get your guys' thoughts on what your favorite release was. Did you upgrade, or maybe you didn't upgrade, but you still like the idea of some new something or other? What do you think is your favorite hardware feature or release in 2017 from Apple? So let's start with Scott this time.
Dude, I love the HomePod, seriously.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I had to go there. for me, the iPhone 8, I know that I'm probably in the minority here, But the iPhone 8 was actually something I didn't know that I was going to be very crazy about. I mean, I'm not happy about the removal of the headphone jack, but whatever, that's said and done. But what I really like about the 8 is the wireless charging, which at first I was like, whatever, who cares? But as I started to use it, I realized, wow, this is a lot more convenient. I just set my phone down on this charging thing, and that's it. I don't have to mess with cables, which is a good thing because, you know, ports wear out in over time. So it's great to just be able to set the phone down on the wireless charger, and that's it. You know, it's not occupying any ports. I can still use the lightning port if I want to, and I don't have to mess around with the cables. So for me, that was the coolest thing that Apple did in 2017, personally.
Yeah, I have to agree. I did the same thing, actually, with the with the wireless charging. That I didn't use it at first, and then once I started using it, I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't go back now. It's really cool.
Wow. So, Dave, why don't we just keep going with you then? What was your favorite thing?
Can I give a special mention to AirPods? Because they technically came out in 2016, but it was the very end of 2016. And they are, I think they're, they're one of the best new products that Apple have brought out in a few years. I think they're amazing. Like, they're just so convenient. They just pop them in your ears and they just connect to the last device you were connected to. They, well, for me anyway, they stay in my ears. You know what I mean? You can, people can hear you when you use them as, on the phone as well and everything. Like, they're, I think they're an absolutely brilliant product. I'd recommend them to anyone. And then obviously I should mention the iPhone X, as I think I'm the only one on this call who has it, who got it, so I should probably mention it. It is a really cool phone that, you know, I know, like, to a certain point, phones aren't going to change a huge amount. It's a slab of glass, but it is definitely the biggest redesign that they've done since the original one, because the home button is gone. And like a lot of people, I kind of wondered and maybe worried a little bit about how, what that was going to be like to have no home button. But I adapted to it, like, immediately. Like, within hours, I didn't miss the home button. It was just, it's so natural now. And they gave us kind of swipe gestures to replace the home, pressing the home or going to the app switcher. That just works so naturally, and they're one-finger gestures. I worried that they'd give us some of these awkward three-finger gestures that you needed two hands, which would have been a disaster, but they didn't. They gave us one finger, you know, that so you can use it one-handed, and it's a really nice phone. It's lovely to have. I had a 6 Plus a few years ago, and I didn't like it. It was too big and unwieldy, whereas this phone has a bigger screen than that, but in a smaller shell that I can actually hold and use. So, yeah, I think it's a really cool phone, and it's definitely the future kind of design, I think, for iPhones.
Well, speaking of one finger, just real quick, kind of an off-topic thing. Give us your quick thoughts. Face ID or Touch ID?
Touch ID. That is a good point.
Really?
Face ID works. It's good. But it just takes a bit more thought. Like, you know, with Touch ID, you just press the button and you're in. With Face ID, you kind of have to think about what you're doing for a second. You sometimes, you know, if you're too close to the phone, I won't recognize this, you have to pull it back. If you're lying down on the couch, you might have to readjust kind of how you're sitting, or do you know what I mean? It's not as seamless as Touch ID, even though it does recognize me well when I am in, when I get myself into the right position, it recognizes me well, but it's just not as seamless as Touch ID. So that is probably the one thing that I am crazy about, but it's worth the sacrifice. I could still overall a really lovely phone, and Face ID does work very well. It's just not quite as good as Touch ID.
I think with Touch ID, you know, for my use case specifically, I just put my phone, you know, I always keep my phone in my pocket. I never pull it out of my pocket unless I have to. And so, yeah, Face ID is great for a lot of people, but for me, Touch ID is way more convenient because, especially when you're going through, say, a bad area of a city or something like that, you don't want to have your phone out. And you can enter your passcode, but I can just unlock it with my thumb. It's just so much faster. Not to say that Face ID is terrible, because it's not, but just for me specifically, it's not something I want to have.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy to have it, but I can't deny that Touch ID, you know, if those rumors about them embedding Touch ID under the screen had come to pass, I would have probably liked that better. But Face ID, so, it does the job. It does the job.
And Tyler, what about you for favorite product or thoughts on Face ID / Touch ID?
Well, I haven't upgraded to anything this year, but I am intrigued by the iPhone X. I tried one out at my local Apple store. One thing that I really like about it, is that it is, like Dave said, a smaller shell, but a bigger screen. Right now, I have a 4.7-inch iPhone 7, and I went that over the 7 Plus because, well, for one, I don't need a big screen because I'm totally blind, and number two, the Plus model seems so bulky, but this is sort of an interesting middle ground with the iPhone 10 because it's a bigger screen than either other models, the 7 or the 7 Plus, and also it's compact enough where it doesn't feel so bulky in a pocket. So I really like that. So if I upgrade my phone, it would probably be something like an iPhone 10 or an iPhone 10S or 11 or whatever they decide to do. Yeah. If, you know, come September when they introduce new models and have to figure out their next naming scheme.
I didn't really upgrade it either, but I did get a Series 2 Apple Watch. I upgraded from my first generation back in May. So I figured because I bought it this year, it still counts. And I really love that. That's kind of slowed down, honestly, with watchOS 4, and I'm not sure why, but it's certainly still better than the first generation I was using, especially where I can use it for swim tracking now. So that was fun. I also got Dave's AirPods. I got a pair of those just about 3 weeks ago. And compared to the Aftershocks, it's a really interesting comparison because there are a lot of advantages to each product and they both sort of serve mm-hmm. different needs. So I'm still not sure which one I prefer. In certain situations, I like one over the other, but the situation dictates which one I prefer to have. So it's an interesting mix having the AirPods in my life now, but I do like how seamless they all are with each other and with all the Apple products. That's really neat. I also want to give a shout out to Apple for releasing the new low-cost, low-end iPad. They did that back in the spring, and even though it's just an iPad, it's nothing different from what we've had before. It's a lot cheaper. I mean, it's $329 for 32 gigs. I remember back when the iPad was $500 for 16 gigs. So having this lower cost option is great. It's an entry level device, but I've got one, works just fine. I can still do all the split screen stuff. I can do all the fancy dragging and whatever. It's really nice to have. So if you're a student and you need an iPad, you know, you don't want to go full MacBook, but your phone's not really doing it, or your school won't let you use your phone, it's really good to have this lower cost option. Well, for just anyone, really, you know, students, professionals, anyone that needs it, you just grab this and a $30 Bluetooth keyboard, and you've got a really decent computing platform. So it's nice to have that lower cost, and I'm glad to see Apple doing that. And just to bring it back to accessibility, you guys mentioned earlier the wireless charging. I also have the iPhone 7. I haven't really upgraded that this year. But my thought when I heard wireless charging and now hearing it again on this call is it's great for people who have any sort of nerve problems or anything that makes it hard to manipulate a little tiny plug into a little tiny jack. You know, lightning cables are small, and they're usually pretty slippery, and they're hard to use if you have any sort of problems with your hands or your fingers, nerve damage, anything like that. So it's awesome to see that there's now an option for them to just put their phone down, and it charges, and you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to mess with cases or try to use cables, nothing like that. So that's really nice to see. We don't usually think of accessibility in terms of other than vision, because that's what we focus on generally. But the accessibility for people with physical disabilities is also definitely there in the new iPhones. And it's nice to see Apple doing that for them as well. I know that wasn't their primary goal, but it's certainly a good benefit.
Well, yeah, not only that, but even bringing it back to blindness and low vision for a little bit, people who lose their vision later in life don't necessarily want to have to feel around. And even if they have the technical ability or the tactual ability to recognize a lightning cable and where it goes, they may not want to. You know, they don't want to use touch for something that they used vision for so long. So even for those people, you know, they know pretty much where they need to set it. And as long as you get it lined up correctly, you're good to go. So there's a lot of
people. Never thought of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things now that I have one that I'm thinking about. And I'm like, well, that's easier because now you don't have to mess with the cable. Not to mention when you lose the cable. Now you don't have to worry about that either, you know?
Yeah.
Or you shred the cable and you have to pay another €35 for a new cable.
Right.
Exactly. And the other thing I like about it is it's universal. So if I go to an airport that has a wireless charger that it supports, I can set it on the charger there or wherever. You know, these are starting to pop up in a lot of different places, these wireless charging stations. So thankfully, Apple didn't go with some proprietary thing that would have really knocked it down, but they went with a more universal standard, which is great. Even if you think about it for a minute, say you're traveling to another country and you don't have the correct plug for that country so that you can plug into a wall socket. Well, with these wireless chargers, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
Very true.
Good point. So let me ask you all real quick. We'll just go around the circle. What is your favorite Apple product of all time? Just anyone, shout it out there.
Oof, that's a hard one.
That is a hard
one. HomePod, that's my standard answer.
HomePod, yeah.
HomePod, yeah.
I do have a place in my heart for the iPhone 3GS. Maybe it's because it was my first one, but I...
Really?
I love the design of it and everything, the kind of slightly rounded back and all that. I thought it was a really nice phone.
I'm going to have to say iPhone 4. And the reason I'm saying iPhone 4 is because I like my screen really small. So that is the most portable phone I ever had. The 4 was my first one. But I would love to see a modern device in that form factor. I never will, but, you know, hey, a guy can dream, right?
Absolutely. There's a lot of people out there who want the smaller phone, but still want the best phone.
Yeah, the SE is selling really, really well, and there's rumors they might upgrade it next year in 2018.
It needs an update, because it's iPhone 6 equivalent, so it needs maybe 6S. I'm not sure.
A9
is it 6S? Chip. Okay, yeah. Still, yeah. It's probably due.
Yeah, I think the SE would be my runner-up. Again, smaller form factor, but it's a more modern phone and a smaller footprint, so... yeah, those would be my two, and that's why.
Huh. Tyler, what do you think?
I would say the Mac is what kind of got this whole, at least what I can remember, we got VoiceOver started and kind of laid the groundwork for that. I remember getting a Mac in 2005. It was an iBook G4. That's not my favorite product. yeah. But that was the first kind of iteration of VoiceOver, Apple's first serious attempt at accessibility. And then over the years, with particularly Leopard in 07 and then Snow Leopard in 09, they really advanced on that to the point where Mac OS became competitive in what was before an almost exclusive Windows dominated world.
So you'd go with the Mac?
Yeah, probably Mac OS, even though at least what it appears to be today, I don't know if it's getting the same attention that it may have gotten in Apple's history.
Yeah.
But here's hoping for 2018, hoping that, you know, it will get the same, you know, attention for its share of accessibility bugs in the current version and whatnot.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to love, you know, the Mac that brought us VoiceOver and the iPhone that kind of perfected it over the years and all the stuff. But I guess my pick would really have to be the Apple Watch. I know you need an iPhone to run it. I know it's not a standalone device. I know. But I love the idea of having a tiny little computer right on my wrist, always with me. I can dunk it in the water. I can swim with it. It doesn't care. I've bumped it into walls. I've run it into stuff. It's fine. It's a durable, little tiny thing that lets me do a lot of things, you know, messages and check notifications, the weather, upcoming events and reminders. All the stuff is right there. I don't have to unlock things. I don't have to take something out of my pocket. I just raise my wrist. I touch the screen with the other finger, and VoiceOver is reading whatever I want it to read. Plus, it does all the fitness stuff. I find myself being a lot more active and trying a lot harder with my fitness simply because I want to fill those little fitness circles that it has on there. You know, I'm doing more of that. It's helping me in a lot of ways, and I just love having it. And while it's technically not an essential product, and you do need an iPhone to run it, at least right now, I really would hate to go back to not having an Apple Watch with me. So that's got to be my pick, is the Apple Watch. And hopefully one day I'll get to experience the joy of the Series 3 or even the Series 4, because right now my 2 is a little bit slow, but it still does the job. It still works very, very well, and I love it. All right, that is all the Apple official stuff. So now I want to get your thoughts on non-Apple devices that work with Apple. So maybe you've got a case that you love, a screen protector, a smart something or other that works with HomeKit, you know, whatever it is, any non-official Apple thing that you still can use with Apple devices. What is your favorite that you either that came out this year or that you got this year? It doesn't necessarily have to be released in 17. And go ahead, Dave.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say, just there at Christmas, I got myself a couple of smart plugs. I'm living in a rented apartment, so I don't have a huge amount of ability to rewire things or anything like that.
Right.
But we don't have much in the way of... We have a central heating system, I won't go into it, but it's useless and nobody uses them. So we use use electric radiators, basically, electric heaters. But that meant I was waking up to a cold apartment or coming home from work to a cold apartment. So I got some smart plugs so that I can schedule them or turn them on remotely and that kind of thing. So I've got a couple of those and I really like them so far. They're not actually HomeKit enabled, it turns out, because I didn't buy them myself. But they are working with Alexa just fine. And also there is an app that I can use called Casa, which is not refined from a voiceover point of view, but usable, you know, one of those apps. Poorly labeled buttons, but you know what the buttons are, kind of apps. So I can kind of turn them on and off remotely using Alexa, you know, the Alexa app, or in the Casa app, I can set schedules for when I want the heaters to turn on and off. So it's my first time dipping into kind of smart home stuff, and in this case, really useful. So that's my pick.
Nice. All right, let's go with Tyler.
Well, I would say this didn't come out in 2017, but I got it at the end of 2016 for Christmas, and it is a Bose SoundLink wireless speaker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I really like the sound quality. You know, it's not a smart speaker, but outdoors in the summer, believe it or not, in Maine, for those who don't live there, there are some hot summer days, particularly July, August.
Yeah, we think they're hot anyway.
Yeah, hot from our perspective. Yeah, so being out there, you know, listening to music on the speaker, and the fact that it's moderately dust and water resistant also makes it a good sort of outdoor speaker, because if it's being exposed to the elements, it would need to have some measure of quality against such things.
Yeah, makes sense. Scott, what's your thought?
That is a really hard one for me. And I'm not even trying to be funny here, but it might make you laugh. What about the Echo Dot? Because you can do a lot of stuff with the app on iOS. And you look at apps like Spotify, and let's say I'm searching for something on my iPhone, because voice search does not always do what you want it to. I can search for it in the Spotify app and then choose the Echo Dot to play the music on. So, in that sense, the iPhone sort of augments the Echo device. You know, it was a real close one between that and we purchased a Honeywell thermostat earlier this year. Oh man, is that wonderful just to be able to, and I get to yell first thing in the morning when I want the temperature changed. So I take out all my anger on, you know, some device that doesn't care. I've even hurled insults at it and it took it, so, which I guess
computers have feelings too, Scott.
What's that?
The computers have feelings too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, you can hurl insults at it, and I'm not going to do any here because, you know, family friendly and all that, but most of the time it still recognizes it, which I think means that the programmers had to actually program it to recognize all my four-letter words. Which is kind of funny. An
interesting job.
Turn up the bleeping temperature.
Well, what would I go with? I think I'm going to have to sort of agree with Dave in the smart home world. We started getting a couple of smart plugs last year, but we really kind of expanded things this year. We've got a bunch more plugs, and we've also got a smart thermostat and a smart door lock. So those are both really neat. What I can do is, I've got a lot of stuff, you know, automated and connected. So the lamps in the living room, they're each connected to a smart plug. They turn on an hour before sunset, which is just about perfect as far as when it starts to get dark. Yeah. There's a lamp in one of the bedrooms that will come on when the person whose room it is arrives home, if it's after sunset. You know, there's the lock will automatically unlock as you get near it, and you can also remotely unlock it. So if we have someone coming over, we know they're supposed to be there. All they do is send one of us a text, and whoever gets it just goes into the home app on their phone, unlocks the lock from wherever they are, and that's it. The person can then get in, and the lock will relock itself automatically after a few minutes. Now, what I've got, and I haven't set it up yet, is a HomeKit-enabled sensor, so that instead of locking after a set amount of time, the lock will only relock itself when the door closes again. So you can leave it open all day, it's not going to lock, but as soon as you close it, that's it, it's done, it's locked. So I love that lock. We have a smart thermostat. I was laying in bed the other day, I was really cold. I had my watch on, my Apple Watch, so I just popped open the Home app and raised the temperature. It was the best thing ever. So cool. So all this home stuff is really fun. I have a color-changing light bulb I got for Christmas. Yes, I'm blind. Yes, I have a color-changing light bulb. Leave me alone. I wanted to play with it. I wanted just to see what it would do. I can't see the colors all that well, so it doesn't help me too much. But it's probably going to end up in one of the downstairs lights so that it can do things like come on when the door is unlocked and it's after a certain time, or, you know, set to a certain color when something happens, just different fun things like that. And there's a lot more stuff that I could add to this home that I probably will. And the only problem with it all is it's a little bit expensive, but it's fun toys. It's kind of my hobby, you know, it's just cool and I like to do it. So whatever. That'd probably be my pick, just because so much has become so much easier and more efficient now with automation and with the ability to control the stuff from anywhere. I love the smart home, specifically HomeKit devices. They're really cool. They're really fun to play with. Any final thoughts on anything that we've gone over before we close up here?
Final thoughts. Is it time for lunch yet?
I think it's past.
Oh, I gave up my lunch for this?
Yeah, it's worth it, and you know it.
Yeah. Alexa, make me lunch.
Everyone's Alexa's going off.
I guess
the thing. Like, wasn't there a Burger King? Oops, wasn't there like a Burger King commercial or something where it wasn't Alexa? Oh, I think it was Google Home or something, and they had the announcer on television go, "Okay, Google, tell me about the Whopper," and a bunch of Google Home devices all over. So you'd go into this this Whopper thing because the Burger King commercial announcer commanded it, and that's something that's definitely genius. Emphasizes the need for voice recognition. So yeah. That someone can't, yeah.
I remember that.
So that a television commercial, that a company can't advertise its products right into your home using your smart home devices.
Yep. So how long before they ban the use of those phrases in ads?
Right. Probably.
Maybe we'll talk about that at the 2018 version of this podcast.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, so before we leave, though, just on a different note, what's your favorite thing in 2017? It could be a new show that came out, or a new restaurant that opened, or a new tech toy you got maybe that we haven't covered yet, a new instrument, whatever it is. What's your highlight for this year been? And we'll just go around. We'll start with Tyler again.
Oh man, I haven't gotten much stuff. I haven't gotten much stuff this year. Let's see. Young Sheldon.
Oh yeah, that started this year, didn't it?
Yeah, it's a spin-off of The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Is it good?
It's all right. I'm not the most harsh TV or movie critic, so I can't give an analysis or any kind of information on that. But I mean, it's, you know, I watch it.
Good enough. Dave, let's go with you next.
Well, whether it qualifies as favorite thing of the year, I don't know, but I'm going to go with Black Mirror, which hit season 4 the other day. And I think I only started watching it earlier in 2017. I watched all 3 seasons before and then was waiting on bated breath for season 4 to come along. So I've watched the first 3 so far of season 4, and yeah, it's such a good show. It's amazing.
I love that show. It is so good. NSFW, just in case you have kids watching or something. definitely not safe for work, but it's an awesome show. Just, you know, respect the age rating on there. What about you, Scott? What's your favorite thing?
Yeah, I'd say a favorite thing for me in 2017, it was a later in 2017 deal, but probably my Lyft Pass. They're not available in a lot of places yet, but we have them now here in Charlotte, and it's $300 a month, but then you get 60 rides of up to $30 with that pass. So obviously it saves you money in the long run if you're somebody that uses Lyft a lot like I do. What I did prior to this was sometimes I'd use paratransit, which is a big time waster.
Right.
And it cost me about $15 one way to go back and forth to the office. Fortunately, I don't have to go to the office every day of the week. But it's enough that it benefits me, and then I'm kind of free to, like, if I want to go somewhere on the other side of town now, well, there'll be a Lyft here in 5 minutes, and I'll go. And it's a really welcome, it's a luxury, I'll say that for it, but I love it. Alex, what about you?
Well, I kind of want that Lyft Pass now. That's really cool. And I mean, 300 is a lot, but, you know, if you figure it's less than a lot of car payments and you don't pay fuel, you don't pay insurance. So kind of look at it that way. It's really not terrible if you need it.
Well, you know, in some cities, Boston is one of them. They're now experimenting with using Lyft instead of paratransit.
Oh,
so that's an interesting development.
Wow, I can't say I'm shocked. It kind of makes sense, but I didn't think they would actually do it this soon.
I have no idea what you people are talking about.
Yeah, it's in pilot now. Well, but
Dave, do you have Lyft over where you are?
No, Lyft didn't make it. Uber tried, but they're not very... The European Union kind of clamped down on Uber quite a bit. They told them they have to be regulated as a taxi. But we have apps, like we had an app called Halo, which is just used... regular taxis, you know, and they've been bought out by a company called My Taxi. So it's a good app, and you know, you can get your apps that way, or your Lyfts that way. So, but we haven't got Lyft or Uber really, but we do get free public transport if you're visually impaired.
Nice.
So all buses, trains, and all that kind of stuff. So,
man, that'd be cool. I wish I did that. So you don't have any form of paratransit?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh.
Alex, we're still waiting for your favorite thing in 2017.
I'm still thinking. I may or may not be stalling here. I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff. I got my first ever high-end Taylor. It's an acoustic guitar, and I absolutely love it. It's my baby, and it's my favorite thing ever. I don't know. I got a new bass amp for Christmas, so that's really nice to have the bass actually sound like a bass. That's cool. I guess I'd have to go with those two as kind of my biggest things. You know, there's been a lot of fun stuff. As I said, I got my Apple Watch update. Oh boy, that would qualify too, though, because I really love doing that. All the things. They're all my favorite. All I love everything. Stuff. There we go.
Are you going to play us out?
probably not. No, I'm
Let's do one more thing to be totally unpredictable.
All right.
Because that's, I'm weird like that. What, and we'll go around, what was your favorite thing you did in 2017? And I guess, Alex, I'll spare you and we'll stall a little bit.
Oh, good. Good.
And Dave, what was your...
God, no, not me first. I can't think of anything.
Was it that bad of a year, really?
It was a perfectly serviceable year. I just can't think of, what did I do that actually stood out? Oh, I know. I joined the AppleViz editorial team.
Oh, hey, same here.
All right. Good nice. Save. Good save. Okay, Alex. Well, Dave isn't going to bail you out, so unfortunately, maybe you can smack him for that in 2018. But since you don't have that long of arms, why don't you go ahead and tell us. Even if you can't name one, just one of your highlights of 2017.
Well, speaking as the AppleViz Extra podcast host, I make you go first. So, Scott, what do you got? Favorite thing? It's your question. Now I know how you guys felt when I asked you all these questions.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. I don't know. It is a hard one. I think one of the highlights for me, this last year, was probably I presented at a Deafblind International conference in Denmark back in September. And that was just a really cool thing. I've never presented to an international audience, really. So that would definitely be on the list for me.
That is pretty cool.
That's really cool. All right. You know what? I've got two.
Ooh, bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. So... the first one is I work full time. I do computers for a small company here in the city where I live. But I also part time on the weekends. Mostly I do some assistive technology training. And I picked up a new client earlier this year. And just watching that client, we're working on the iPad. And this person is completely blind, so uses VoiceOver. And just watching them go from not a clue what an iPad is and just getting so frustrated every week to now when I come in, all I hear is, I was on the Spectrum TV app and I found this. And then I went over here and I purchased this movie and to see the huge growth in just a few months from nothing to now not being an expert, but being proficient enough to get around and actually starting to use this to its full potential is really, really cool to see. I love seeing that. And I haven't been able to see that in quite a long time because I haven't had a client go from, zero to where this person is now. So that's always fun.
That's very cool.
My other has to be joining the local YMCA because that's the only place we've got a pool and I love to swim and I haven't been swimming actively since, about 8 or 9 years, I think. So I finally got back into that. I have my new Apple Watch to track my swimming. And when the pool is closed or if I get there after work and the swim team's in there, there's a nice weight room I can go in. I go in there with my guide dog, Cosby, and he has the best time in the world because he knows how to find chairs. And since all the weight machines have chairs on them, he just runs to the next one. He just loves it. As soon as I stand up from one, he hops up and he sprints to the next one in line and his tail's just wagging a mile a minute. So getting in shape, getting better in shape there. And giving Cosby such a good time too. it's a lot of fun. So
and becoming one of the village people.
Oh, I thought of one.
What?
Oh, what? AppleViz isn't good enough for you now?
Nah.
I see how it is.
Yeah. I remembered. I was trying to think. Did I travel this year? And then, I did. I was in Spain for the visually impaired tennis world championships where. Ireland competed for the first time. Well, it was actually the first international championships, but we only started playing in the summer of 2016 and we went to these championships and reached the quarterfinals and it was really cool to meet players from all over the world and play against them and learn from them and amazing.
I had no idea that was a thing.
Oh, it's amazing. If you can get us started in your area, totally do. It's really good fun.
How did you, if you're visually, I tried tennis in seventh grade and it was a disaster. How do you do it?
So it's, there's B1, B2, and B3. I'm in B2, but there is, basically the ball it's a bit bigger than the standard tennis ball and spongier, so it moves a lot slower, and it also has a rattly noise inside it. Uh-huh. So you hear the ball coming as well. And then the court dimensions are a little bit smaller as well than a regular tennis court, and the ball can bounce two or three times depending on your category. So it's impressive when you see the really top guys playing and girls playing. They're like amazing. It's frightening.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Great sport.
Wow. Well, I think that'll about do it then for this Applevis Extra. Thanks again, everyone, for joining me on here. And thank you to the listeners for joining all of us. We'll try to include some of the links to things we talked about in the show notes. So if you're interested in any of those, check out the show notes. And if you don't see what you're looking for, just drop a comment on the podcast page and we will try to find what you're looking for. So on behalf of Applevis, I hope you had a great 2017, and I hope your 2018 is even better. And thanks again to the people on this call. I wish you guys the very best of New Year's, tonight into tomorrow, or, well, I don't know, what time is it for you over there, Dave?
We started about 4, so I don't know, I haven't looked at the time. It's 5 hours ahead of US Eastern.
Ah, so you're coming right up on it then. Well, happy New Year to you then. You will get there first. You win.
Congratulations.
I'll tell you what
Australia
happens in the future.
Thanks, yeah, I'll be interested to hear. All right, well, thanks everyone for joining us, and we will see you next time on the next Applevis Extra.
Have a great New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Applevis Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @Applevis and like us on Facebook.